too. Well, we were going to have them at the same time. It seems, I don't know, more romantic, I suppose, more symmetrical. DeJale laughed lightly and stroked Byers' arm. They're in the big circular room at the top of the tower. Cran, Erst and Tully, and her and Byer. She stood by the log fire with Byer. She looked to see if Byer wanted to take up the story, but she just smiled and drank from her wine goblet. But then, when we thought about it, DeJale continued, it did kind of seem a bit crazy. Two brand new babies, and just the two of us here to look after them, and first-time mothers. Only-time mothers, Byer muttered, making a face into her goblet. The others laughed. DeJale stroked Byer's arm again. Well, however it turns out, we'll see. But you see, this way we can have whatever time in between Wren being born and our other child. She looked at Byer, smiling warmly. We haven't decided on the other name yet. Anyway, she went on, doing it this way will give me time to recover and get the two of us used to coping with a baby before Byer has his. Well, hers, she said laughing, and put her arm round her partner's shoulder. Yes, Byer said, glancing at her, we can practice on yours, and then get it right with mine. Oh, you, DeJale said, squeezing Byer's arm. The other woman smiled briefly. The term used for what DeJale and Byer were doing was mutualing. It was one of the things you could do when you were able, as virtually every human in the culture had been able to do for many millennia, to change sex. It took anything up to a year to alter yourself from a female to a male, or vice versa. The process was painless, and set in action simply by thinking about it. You went into the sort of trance-like state DeJale had accessed earlier that evening, when she'd looked within herself to check on the state of her fetus. If you looked in the right place in your mind, there was an image of yourself as you were now. A little thought would make the image change from your present gender to the opposite sex. You came out of the trance, and that was it. Your body would already be starting to change, glands sending out the relevant viral and hormonal signals, which would start the gradual process of conversion. Within a year, a woman who had been capable of carrying a child, who indeed might have been a mother, would be a man, fully capable of fathering a child. Most people in the culture changed sex at some point in their lives, though not all had children while they were female. Generally, people eventually changed back to their congenital sex, but not always. And some people cycled back and forth between male and female all their lives, while some settled for an androgynous in-between state, finding there a comfortable equanimity. Long-term relationships in a society where people generally lived for at least 3.5 centuries were necessarily of a different nature from those in the more primitive civilizations, which had provided the culture's original bloodstock. Lifelong monogamy was not utterly unknown, but it was exceptionally unusual. A couple staying together for the duration of an offspring's entire childhood and adolescence was a more common occurrence, but was still not the norm. The average culture child was close to its mother, and almost certainly knew who its father was, assuming it was not, in effect, a clone of its mother, or had, in place of a father's genes, surrogated material which the mother had effectively manufactured. But it would probably be closer to the aunts and uncles, who lived in the same extended familial grouping, usually in the same house, extended apartment, or estate. There were partnerships which were intended to last, however, and one of the ways that certain couples chose to emphasize their codependence was by synchronizing their sex changes, and at different points playing both parts in the sexual act. A couple would have a child, then the man would become female, and the woman would become male, and they would have another child. A more sophisticated version of this was possibly due to the amount of control over one's reproductive system which still further historic genetic tinkering had made possible. It was possible for a cultured female to become pregnant, but then, before the fertilized egg had transferred from her ovary to the womb, began the slow change to become a man. The fertilized egg did not develop any further, but neither was it necessarily flushed away or reabsorbed. It could be held, contained, put into a kind of suspended animation, so that it did not divide any further, but waited still inside the ovary. That ovary, of course, became a testicle. But, with a bit of cellular finessing and some intricate plumbing, the fertilized egg could remain safe, viable, and unchanging in the testicle, while that organ did its bit in inseminating the woman who had been a man, and whose sperm had done the original fertilizing. The man who had been a woman then changed back again. If the woman who had been a man also delayed the development of her fertilized egg, then it was possible to synchronize the growth of the two fetuses and the birth of the babies. To some people in the culture, this admittedly rather long-winded and time-consuming process was quite simply the most beautiful and perfect way for two people to express their love for one another. To others, it was slightly gross and, well, tacky. The odd thing was that until he'd met and fallen in love with De Jail, Gunnar Hofoen had been firmly of the latter opinion. He decided 20 years earlier, before he was even fully sexually mature and really knew his own mind about most things, that he was going to stay male all his life. He could see that being able to change sex was useful, and that some people would even find it exciting, but he thought it was weak somehow. But then De Jail had changed Byers' mind. They'd met aboard the General Contact Unit recent convert. She was approaching the end of a 25-year contract career, he just starting a 10-year commitment, which he might or might not request to extend when the time came. He had been the rake, she the unavailable older woman. He had decided when he joined Contact that he'd try to bed as many women as possible, and from the first had set about doing just that. With a single-minded determination and dedication, many women found highly fetching just by itself. Then, on the recent converts, he cut his usual swathe through the female half the ship's human crew, but was brought to a sudden stop by De Jail Galion. It wasn't that she wouldn't sleep with him. There'd been lots of women he'd asked who'd refused him for a variety of reasons, and he'd never felt any resentment towards them, or been any less likely to eventually count them as friends than the women he had made love to. It was that she told him she did find him attractive, and ordinarily would have invited him to her bed, but wasn't going to because he was so promiscuous. He'd found this a slightly preposterous reason, but had just shrugged and got on with life. They became friends, good friends. They got on brilliantly. She became his best friend. He kept expecting that this friendship would, as a matter of course, include sex, even if it was just once, but it didn't. It seemed so obvious to him, so natural and normal and right that it should, not falling into bed together after some wonderfully enjoyable social occasion or sports session, or just a night's drinking, seemed positively perverse to him. She told him he was destroying himself with his licentiousness. He didn't understand her. She was destroying him in a way. He was still seeing other women. But he was spending so much time with her because they were such friends. But also because she'd become a challenge. And he decided he would win her, whatever it took. That his usual packed schedule of seductions, affairs and relationships had suffered terribly. He wasn't able to concentrate properly on all these other women, who were, or ought to be, demanding his attention. She told him he spread himself too thinly. He wasn't really destroying himself. He was stopping himself from developing. He was still in a sort of childish state, a boy-like phase, where numbers mattered more than anything, where obsessive collecting, taking, enumerating, cataloguing, all spoke of a basic immaturity. He could never grow and develop as a human being until he went beyond this infantile obsession with penetration and possession. He told her he didn't want to get beyond this stage. He loved it. Anyway, even though he loved it, and wouldn't care if he remained promiscuous until he was too old to do it at all. The chances were that he would change sometime eventually, over the course of the next 3 centuries or so of life, which he could expect. There was plenty of time to do all this damn growing and developing. It would take care of itself. He wasn't going to try and force the pace. If all this sexual activity was something he had to get out of his system before he could mature properly, then she had a moral duty to help him get rid of it as quickly as possible, starting right now. She pushed him away, as ever. He didn't understand, she told him. It wasn't a finite supply of promiscuity he was draining. It was an ever-replenishing fixation that was eating up his potential for future personal growth. She was the still point in his life he needed, or at least a still point. He would probably need many more in his life. She had no illusions about that. But for now, she was it. She was the rock. The river of his turbulent passion had to break around. She was his lesson. They both specialize in the same area, exobiology. He listened to her talk sometimes, and wondered whether it was possible to feel more truly alien towards another being than it was to someone of one's own species, who ought to think in at least vaguely similar ways, but instead thought utterly differently. He could learn about an alien species, study them, get under their skin, under their carapaces, inside their spines or their membranes, whatever else you had to penetrate. Ha! To get to know them, get to understand them. And he could always eventually do that. He could start to think like them, start to feel things the way they would, anticipate their reactions to things, make a decent guess at what they were thinking at any given moment. It was an ability he was proud of. Just by being so different from the creature you were studying, you started out at a sufficiently great angle, it seemed to him, to be able to make that penetration and get inside their minds. With somebody who was 99% the same as you, you were too close sometimes. You couldn't draw far enough away from them to come in at a steep enough angle. You just slid off every time in a succession of glancing contacts. No getting through. Frustration upon frustration. Then a post had come up on a world called Telaturia, a long-term situation, spending anything up to 5 years, with an aquatic species called the Katik, which the culture wanted to help develop. It was a sort of non-ship-based contact post people often offered at the end of their career. To jail was regarded as a natural for it. It would mean 1, maybe 2 people staying on the planet, otherwise alone, save for the Katik, for all that time. There'd be the occasional visit from others, but little time off, and no extended holidays. The whole point was to establish a long-term personal relationship with the Katik individuals. It wasn't something to be entered into lightly. It would mean commitment. Dajail asked to be considered for the post, and was accepted. Baya couldn't believe Dajail was leaving the recent convert. He told her she was doing it to annoy him. She told him he was being ridiculous and unbelievably self-centered. She was doing it because it was an important job, and it was something she felt she'd be good at. It was also something she was ready for now. She'd done her bit scudding round the galaxy in GCUs and enjoyed every moment. But now she'd changed, and it was time to take on something more long-term. She'd miss him, and she hoped he would miss her, though he certainly wouldn't miss her for as long as he claimed he would, or even as long as he thought he would. But it was time to move on, time to do something different. She was sorry she hadn't been able to stick around longer, being his still point. But that was just the way it was, and this was too great an opportunity to miss. Later, he could never remember exactly when he'd made the decision to go with her, but he did. Perhaps he'd started to believe some of the things she'd been telling him, but he too just felt it was time to do something different, even if he had only been in contact for a short while. It was the hardest thing he'd ever done, harder than any seduction, with the possible exception of hers. To start with, he had to convince her it was a good idea. She wasn't even initially flattered, not for a second. It was a terrible idea, she told him. He was too young, too inexperienced. It was far, far too early in his contact stint. He wasn't impressing her. He was being stupid. It wasn't romantic. It wasn't sensible. It wasn't flattering. It wasn't practical. It was just idiotic. And if, by some miracle, they did let him go along with her, he needn't assume that just making this great commitment would ensure she'd sleep with him. This didn't prove anything, except that he was as foolish as he was vain.